Blog Talk Radio.
Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Tonight's show, Whistleblowers, is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. We wouldn't be having these shows without Marcel. That's a fact. And before we get started, I did want to make an announcement for all of you out there that listen to these shows and the shows on guardianship. Many of you know Deb Dahmer. Her mom is going to be on, let me get this right here, CBS 12 News at 11 p.m. Friday night, and she's going to be talking against bad nursing homes. And she's asking that everybody watch. And of course, they put this on at 11 o'clock at night because most seniors are in bed by that time. Now, gee, I wonder why they're running at them, but the fact is they are. And so anyway, if you're up at 11 o'clock, what is this again? It's CBS 12 News. Dang. They're in Florida. And so anyway, that's what's going on there. Our show tonight, as many of you know, we've been following the story of Anastasia Adams and talked a lot with Yolanda Bell, who's on with us right now, who's her sister, who had been taking care of her. And Yolanda, before we get into what is currently happening, would you please give everybody a background on how all this started and how it culminated at the point we're at right now?
Okay. First, thank you for allowing me to be on this evening, Marty. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Back in December of 2016, Anastasia was admitted to the hospital for pneumonia and a couple other issues. And while she was in the hospital, she developed a pericardial effusion, which is fluid around the heart, and a 12-inch blood clot. Well, ANOVA Fairfax Hospital in Fairfax, Virginia, wanted to discharge her without treating her because ostensibly because she has a brain injury. They specifically stated that, we can't cure everything she has during the case management meeting that they were trying to pressure me to let them discharge her that night. And so because I appealed it, and because I disagreed with them and I refused to consent to discharge, those specific, literally, refused to consent to discharge, they took me to court and sued me for guardianship of Anastasia. Just amazingly, the court actually gave them guardianship February 15th, and February 17th, they swooped her up out of the hospital, didn't tell anyone. I get there, she's gone. The room is empty, in disarray, which if she at the time that she left the room, still shouldn't have been like that, but I'm assuming that it was left that way for my benefit.
Yes.
And so when we finally tracked her down where they'd sent her to a nursing home by the name of Dulles Health and Rehab, which is in Herndon, Virginia. And while she was there, they proceeded to severely break her hip. She had numerous other injuries, bruising that no one can explain.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up back in the hospital with that. And when she got out of the hospital, they moved her to a second nursing home, Sleepy Hollow, which used to be was Golden Living Center, Sleepy Hollow, which was run by Beverly Enterprises.
Yes, I'm very familiar with Golden Living Centers. They're notoriously infamous. Yeah.
Right. And so she was only there 11 days before she wound up back in the hospital with severe sepsis, severe anemia. She had chemosis, blisters on her eyes. And the guardians had refused to allow or would not set or fix her hip. So they left Anastasia in excruciating pain for months. They just refused to do that.
What was the reason, Yolanda, they gave for refusing to set her hip?
Well, because they feel that everything that has happened to her, that her drastic decline in health is all, everything that has happened is due to a brain injury that she suffered in 2005. She suffered an anoxic brain injury in 2005.
What is that exactly?
That is a condition when your brain doesn't get enough oxygen.
Okay.
It causes hypoxia. I believe it is the term they use. And so you can come up with varying degrees of deficits. Now, she came out with a deficit. The only deficit she came out, walked out of with that was that, and I say walked out because she walked out of the hospital under her own power.
Okay.
That she had issues with her short-term memory and her sense of smell. And that was it.
Okay.
She was still cooking herself breakfast with supervision because she would kind of walk away from the stove and it's like, sweetie, you can't do that.
Right.
So, but other than that, that was it. And then later on down the line, she was given medication by a doctor, amazingly enough, that was attached to and working for Inova Fair Oaks Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That put her into a wheelchair.
For God's sake.
Yeah, put her into a wheelchair. And
what was the medication, Yolanda? Do you know?
Yes, Zyprexa. Well, that, and they gave her Haldol while she was in the hospital.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
Both of those medications, by the way, are prohibited for use on people with brain injury, concussion, any other condition along that line. If you read the background material on both of them, are prohibited from use on individuals in this condition because it can cause an exacerbation of the symptoms and it can cause a worsening. It also causes a shrinkage of the frontal cortex of the brain. And it says right in the circular on them, not to be administered, but they do it every day.
Right. And it's Zyprexa, at least then, I have no idea whether they've changed formulations or changed usage instructions, but it's meant to be, not meant to be a long-term medication.
Right.
And they had her on it for, this particular doctor had her on it for close to a year. And so we had an actual, a neurologist is the one that told us that it is the Zyprexa that was prescribed that put her in the wheelchair. And it was the Haldol that caused the other issues that she was having with her right hand.
Okay.
So, but in any case, they discharged her from the hospital, put her in Dulles Health and Rehab, refused to fix her hip. She wound up in Sleepy Hollow, Golden Living Center, Sleepy Hollow, after she was released from the hospital the second time. Or excuse me, the first time. And then when she was released from the hospital after she came from Sleepy Hollow, she wound up in where she's at now, the Envoy.
Okay.
Now, she also had a broken ankle while she was at Sleepy Hollow and in the
Let me guess, they didn't know how that happened.
No, none of the injuries that she's received, they have no clue to how they happened. One of the judges actually asked him, well, do you know how this happened? Because I brought it up during a hearing that, well, this is what has happened. This is what they've done. She has a severely broken hip. They're not having it fixed. And the judge asked him, well, do you know how did the hip happen? Well, nobody knows about that. So, which makes no sense because she's in a wheelchair, so she didn't fall, and I'm trying to figure out how you consider a broken hip related to her brain injury.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gee, many Christmas. Well, the moving about that you're talking about is directly related to the length of time that Medicare will pay for hospitalization. This is why they were pressing so hard to get her out, to discharge her, even with these problems. And because the number of days that Medicare would pay for her condition were up. And so right. they that's why they try to get her out and into a nursing home. And then, and I, as I've gone through this story with you, Yolanda, what they've done is move her from the hospital to a nursing home, back to the hospital to a nursing home, back to the hospital to a nursing home. And they keep reactivating this length of time that Medicare will pay for. And also the nursing home has, because of her age and condition, is also limited in how much money they can charge and how many number of days will be paid for. So basically behind the scenes, what's happening is they're bouncing her back and forth to keep restarting these limitations on time so they keep getting paid.
Oh, well, they're charging her over $1,500 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Based upon the documentation that I have, it's $1,548, I believe, something to that effect.
I do want you to know. I wanted to put in here, this show has flown all over the net. It this really went viral. I want you to know that the number of people that are listening, got someone metering the show. We just topped 50,000 listeners. And we're just in the first 15 minutes of this show. But there are a lot of people paying attention to this. There are a lot of people. I put it up on Facebook. You know that. And I also put the number of the hospital. People have been calling the hospital wanting to know what's going on here. If these people think they're going to get away with this and nobody's going to know about it, they're sadly mistaken. This thing has taken off like wildfire. So,
well, that's good to
Anastasia,
hear.
We're out here. We're out here. And but anyway, go ahead there, Yolanda.
Okay, and so she's, like I said, she's now currently in this facility that's out in Alexandria, and they've literally driven her health into the ground. I have watched them, I mean, to where she's had unexplained bruising and different things like that, and when I started to point that out or ask, well, how she got this, because now, and I'm following the instructions that the guardians gave me. If you notice something, bring it to our attention, bring it to the attention of the nursing staff. Well, each time I would do that, they would restrict something. Well, okay, you can no longer touch your sister or hug her or give her any kisses because she's getting these injuries and we don't know how she's getting them. So the only way to do that is to only allow the medical
attendant
staff there, or the staff. Exactly.
So apparently you were kissing and hugging her so hard you left bruises.
Yeah, that or, well, she had an indentation in her skull one day when I went in, and I pointed that out, and along with bruising, and, well, we don't know how that happened. Well, yeah, you may not, but I can pretty much tell you how it happened. I'm not going to, but you need to know that I know how it happened.
My God.
So, and then there was another time that she had a knot on the back of her head. And so at that point they were, well, no more touching. Okay. Well, that went on for approximately 2 months, I guess, maybe a little more. She's still coming up with bruises. She's still coming up with injuries. Well, it's not us because you won't let anybody else touch her. So what does that tell you?
Yeah.
But I didn't even answer that question, so.
Yeah, of course not.
And but she has lost, over the last 2.5 weeks, she has lost an amazing, an alarming amount of weight. You can literally count every vertebrae of her spine.
Oh, God.
And her hands look skeletal. I mean, they're so tiny. They're just so tiny. And she, because she's been in the hospital, I guess, twice, maybe three times since she's been at this facility, she's had to have two or three blood transfusions because at one point she was throwing up blood, and they took her to the hospital but they did not allow or push to have any tests done to find out where the bleeding was coming from.
What?
Yeah. So they
what,
well,
just
because,
sent her back to this and just sent her back to the nursing home?
Yes, ma'am. Their justification for that was that they didn't want to put her through any uncomfortable procedures, you know, doing a scope to find out where the bleeding's coming from. So instead, they just ended up putting her through multiple transfusions.
So, and of course, anesthetic wasn't available. So, I mean, we couldn't have used an anesthetic to do a scope on her. Good.
Right.
Jesus. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Yeah. So, I eventually did get them to agree to, after I think it was about 3 months, allow me to give her a hug and a kiss when I start our visits, because they had initially barred me from seeing her after I called the police after the second to the last injury that she received at Dulles Health and Rehab. I came in one day and I had already been let the guardians know about different bruises, had sent them pictures of her injuries, but nothing was done. Well, we talked to the administrator says everything's fine. And when I came in, I think it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and her right arm was just swollen, and it was discolored, and I was just through. So I called the police, and I filed a report, and at that point, they took me back to court and got permission from a judge to bar me from seeing her and to not have to provide to speak to me.
Who was the judge? Who was the judge?
That judge, the one that did for the barring, that was Thomas Mann.
Okay.
He's a Fairfax County Circuit Court judge.
Okay.
And
Fairfax.
So,
okay.
Yeah, Fairfax County Circuit Court. I have two videos that are up on YouTube and on the website that basically list the number of judges that are involved with the guardianships for these two particular individuals in Inova.
Okay, now who are the guardians, Yolanda?
The guardians are two attorneys that are out of a law firm, Dingman Labowitz, out in Alexandria, Virginia. Kenneth Labowitz is one of the principals, and a partner of theirs, Ann Heishman.
They are
the two court-appointed, yeah, they're the two court-appointed guardians. And all
and
of this
guardians.
Is in the
okay.
court. Correct. They're attorneys, but they're professional guardians. All of this is in the court documents that are also up on the website.
And do you know of any connection? Well, and I'll find it too, because I'll go look for it. What their connection is to this judge and the other judges you have listed on that site? Because I can guarantee you, if you check public records, you'll find this mm-hmm. bunch works together time after time after time after time. We have documented this in so many cases. Same judges, mm-hmm. same attorneys, and now we're seeing attorneys mm-hmm. who are being guardians, we're seeing doctors who are being guardians, and we're seeing hospitals mm-hmm. who are now guardians. This is one of the biggest human trafficking rings running on the globe, second only to Child Protective Services, which is considered the largest child trafficking ring going. Go ahead, Yolanda. I'm sorry.
The only connections that I know of are the ones through ANOVA. Those are the only ones that I've researched at this point. I do plan on broadening my frame of reference, but it was important for me to start here, given that this is what Anastasia is in the middle of. There are 17 judges, like I said. There are 42, or actually it's a little over 42 guardianships that have been awarded to these two particular guardians in the last 18 months, or just barely over 18 months.
It's a money-making deal, ain't it?
Yeah. And it's always the same guardian ad litem as well, and it is always the filings always seem to they all purport that it is an emergent situation. It has to be done. There's no known family or there's no known power of attorney. And on average, these things are, from the time that they file to the time that they're adjudicated, on average is about 7 to 14 days.
Really? Okay, so how did they account for you in all of this? No known family,
I don't think they did. I don't think they accounted for me. I don't think that they took me into account or realized what they were getting.
There you go.
Honestly. Yeah, I don't think they realized what they were getting with me. They knew that I was her power of attorney. And when she was in Fairfax Hospital, when I refused to consent to discharge and I appealed the discharge decision to KEPRO, who is the Virginia Commonwealth of Virginia, their Medicare contractor that handles all the discharge disputes, etc. When I appealed it to them, not surprisingly, they agreed with ANOVA. They are essentially, in my opinion, a rubber stamp for the hospitals around here. As I was told by the director of case management of Reston Hospital Center, Julie Weidman, that people, you can go ahead and appeal your discharge, but KEPRO has only disagreed with our decision twice in the last decade or two. Since it got
really?
Out that you are able that yes, since you got since it got out that Medicare patients are able to appeal the discharge decision. So they've only disagreed with them. Well, now they've disagreed with them three times because they all they disagreed with that particular decision was overturned as well when she was there. Because everybody was always trying to rush her out of the hospital, as you said. If you go to Medicare's website and you search for it, it is actually on there. It's where you can find the spreadsheet that shows how each condition has their underwriters have looked at and determined, say, for pneumonia, for a severe case of pneumonia, will give you 8 days. Well, if the hospital can get you out in 3 days, the additional 5 days are profit for them. So they get to pocket that. And the longer it goes, it eats into that profit. And if you go over that, then they do actually at a point start to suffer a loss. But they make that loss up on their surgery. But that's not something that they want people to look at. If you look at certain things or other conditions like heart-related, coronary-related conditions, et cetera, they make that up on the back end on that. Because they have primary care doctors as well. So they have you come back seeing their doctors.
Yes. Well, and they pad their bills, too. They'll charge like $15 for a Band-Aid, or they'll charge $5 for an aspirin, hypothetically. This is what I'm saying. They'll pad their bill. Your bill can include up to 20% of non-relevant over – I mean, but they won't let you bring in your own, of course. But they charge these exorbitant prices. And you just mentioned
Actually, in our case, Marty, that's not true, that they don't let you bring in your own things. When Anastasia was in Reston Hospital Center, they at one point didn't have her medical nutrition, her isosource. They kept wanting to give her Jevity, and at the particular point in time, she was having we had to end up mixing the two because the Jevity was too heavy for her and the isosource was too light. So we had come up with a perfect medium. Well, they ran out of isosource, didn't have it. Well, we have to order this, or it's not something that we normally have. So I was actually bringing her stuff from home so that she would have tube feeding. I was bringing it from home so that they could utilize that and then even had paid for it myself, had it delivered to the hospital so she could get what she needs. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I want to go back to something else you said. You said they have their own primary caregivers. So, in other words, they use hospitalists, called hospitalists. They're on staff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While she's in the hospital, yes. But they also have primary care, health care, primary care doctors. They have those as well at ANOVA. ANOVA themselves, because ANOVA is that large.
Exactly. But see, a lot of these hospitals are going to this, what they call hospitalist system. And once they do that, the first thing that normally happens is they dismiss whoever her private physician was, and they don't consult them anymore. Then they log all of her symptoms, conditions, everything else, and they run a program. And it tells them every possible diagnosis that can be applied to this, every medication that can be used for this, every therapy, every surgery. And the whole idea of it is to increase the profit of the hospital by a minimum of 20%. and they pay very close attention. One of the things they find is, just like we talked about, this length of time that Medicare will pay. And what I find particularly egregious about this is if you go in, like you said, for a severe pneumonia, and they'll pay for 8 days, but you only stay three, why do they still get paid for eight?
Because that's just the way it's been adjudicated.
Why do they still, people talk about the fraud in Medicare. It isn't the patients defrauding it. It's the medical industry. $30 to $60 billion a year worth. But these hospitalists, I had to have advised everyone, if you're thinking of going in the hospital for any reason, find out first if they use a hospitalist setup, because you are not going to like it. Your doctor is out the door. Your physician is gone, and they have their whole, this is how they're doing this whole medical kidnap thing. Like Boston Children's is doing this to a great degree. They're using hospitalists, and they immediately dismiss the primary care physician, and they start their own diagnosis and everything else, and they just write everything else off. Holy crap, Ola.
Right. Well, I know that they stopped talking. They basically stopped communicating with, or her doctor stopped having a say when she was in the hospital. And the Guardians eventually canceled her Kaiser anyway. They did not want her seeing her regular doctors. She hasn't seen her regular longtime doctors in a year, close to a year.
Right.
And so then they ended up, they canceled it. And I still haven't quite figured out how they managed to cancel something they didn't pay for, because I paid
there
it out
go.
Through the end of the year. But so in any case, she now is, now they want to withdraw her nutrition. That was the latest thing. Last night after I visited, I got in the car and was driving home, and like it was about 15 minutes after I had left. With traffic, rush hour traffic, I hadn't gotten all that far, but I get an email from the Guardian saying that, well, they have determined that they are going to withdraw her nutrition and essentially let her starve to death.
Gee, Merry Christmas.
And that it would take 10 to 15 days, excuse me, 10 to 14 days, for the starvation to bring about the end of her life, although they could not pinpoint that because they're not God.
Right.
And only God knows exactly when you're going to die and how long it takes.
But they're going to help him out, right?
So, yeah, they've made that decision that that's what they're going to do, essentially.
Now, at this point, Yolanda, to me, this is medical murder. I don't see this any different than giving someone the death penalty. This is human euthanasia, and it is quite painful, which is why they are now going to put her into palliative care. When you hear that word, what that means is they are going to give her enough sedation so she can't complain. She can't exhibit the pain that is caused by starvation. Now, how do you call yourself a damn doctor and do something like this? What kind of inhuman animal does something like this to another human being, because you can't wrench any more money out of him, and this is basically what it gets down to? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. No, I understand the frustration. It makes no sense whatsoever. I got one of the emails that he sent me, because when he first sent me the email letting me know, the last video that I put up, it goes through, it's Inovagate Part 2, which is the case management meeting that when they, Inova called me in on the 6th of January to try and strong-arm me to get me to consent to them discharging her that evening. Without medical questions being answered or anything else. And within that video, I have the statement that they are killing my sister. Well, we know that they're monitoring my social media. And
right.
I got an email stating that, well, we are not trying to kill your sister.
Uh-huh,
telling me
right.
that, well, yes, you actually watched it, or somebody let you know that this is what it said.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the email stating that they were going to withdraw her nutrition, I responded and asked him, but yet you say, you claim you're not trying to kill my sister. Well, when you don't no longer provide anyone nutrition, then you're trying to bring about their death. You're trying to
right.
hasten it. And
yes.
He basically responded telling me that, well, no, that my sister was dying because of the effects of her brain injury that she suffered in 2005.
Oh.
Quote, unquote, quote, the miracle is that she has survived as long as she has, end quote.
I see.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you spoke about her in recently becoming emaciated and everything else. Do you suspect
mm-hmm.
at all that they have already been withholding nutrition?
To me, that's the only explanation. Because my sister does not have a terminal disease.
Right.
The only thing that she suffers with chronically is she has the brain injury and she has bronchiectasis. Everything
which is
else
what?
Is all new. With bronchiectasis is an inflammation of I don't know if it qualifies as an inflammation. It's similar to bronchitis, but it's a different form. You
okay.
develop the mucus and the junk in your lungs, and
mm-hmm.
you're coughing up this really, really gross stuff on occasion.
Well, that's
but it does
due to lack of physical activity. That's,
right. Well,
that's
no, she had the bronchiectasis before that, so...
Okay.
She had the bronchiectasis even before the brain injury, and that was due to a medication that she was put on back in the 80s.
After
surgery. Well, no, she'd had surgery, and a very extremely painful surgery, and so they had her on Demerol, which
uh-huh.
we now know attacks your lungs, because that's why Michael Jackson's lungs were in such a bad shape, or as bad a shape as they were in. And that's actually in the coroner's report.
Okay.
That Demerol is known to attack the lining or inflame the lining of lungs.
Mm-hmm.
So, she hadn't had a whole lot of problems with that, but it made her more prone to getting bronchitis, et cetera.
Okay.
But those were the only chronic conditions that she had. And other than that, everything else is new. And so that can be the only explanation to me that in a 2.5-3 week time, she looks like she has lost 10 to maybe 15 pounds. And she didn't have anything to lose.
Yeah.
I would bet that my sister at this point weighs no more than about 90 pounds. That's what I would bet.
Oh, my God. Okay, so apparently they've been doing this all along, at least reducing it significantly
mm-hmm.
to cause the weight
right.
loss, and then say, oh, look, she's in this condition, we've got to stop. The question that keeps coming in my mind is, at what point did you decide she was expendable? And at what point did you decide that
mm-hmm.
she didn't have enough value left to her to help her survive? And that you could withhold
April
food. 10th. I think the people, I think the people that do this should be subjected
mm-hmm.
to the same damn thing. That's what I think. Let's starve
mm-hmm.
you and see how that works out for you.
I can't they initially came out wanting to put her on palliative care. That was their
right.
Plan all along. It was. I mean, they admitted as much to a federal judge during a hearing April 10th of this year, because I had taken them to court into federal court for constitutional violations after they had barred me completely from seeing her. And the judge was very concerned about the claims that I made, and so as an agreement with the judge, with the federal judge, they agreed to set up some sort of a process for me to be, because my visits have to be supervised, that they would set something up so that I would be able to see her. And that's
why would
how I was able to come back.
Why would your visitation have to be supervised?
so that they can watch me to make sure that, essentially, so that they can make sure that I'm not taking pictures or anything.
So you can't document anything.
Right, so that you can't document. Well, I keep very detailed notes. I keep a notebook with me, and I take very detailed notes of what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an educated woman. I have an advanced degree. And I can read and I can write. So I don't need pictures to explain what it is that I'm seeing. When her hip fused back together. If you're standing and your left foot is facing straight forward directly in front of you, now take your right foot and put it at a 90-degree angle to the right.
Okay.
That is how her hip fused back.
Oh.
So one leg is facing completely out and the other one is facing forward.
And nobody thought this was an important enough thing to reset and fix for this girl, right?
No. They,
and how did and did they came in and,
going,
and it, so they came in and saw her in this condition, knew she'd been injured, knew the hip was broken, it was out of alignment, and they just left her lay. Correct?
That's assuming that they came in.
Yeah.
I only know of two visits that they made in the hospital. Now, and that's not to say that they did not visit additional times, because I was limited. I was prevented from staying the night, and after the last time that she was in the hospital, I was limited to visiting 1 hour a day, and it started out that it was only going to be three, but after the second week that she was in there, I managed to convince them, or at least one of them, to allow me to spend, when she's in the hospital, to see her every day.
Okay.
Because normally, when she's in the hospital, I have always been there the entire day. Sometimes, depending on how bad off she was, I would stay the night. And
right.
I know for a fact that was comforting to her, because even when she would be in the hospital before the brain injury, she told me that, here I am, I'm feeling like crap, and I'm laying there. I open my eyes, but I see you sitting in the corner. Sometimes, you're sleeping in a chair, just, kind of uncomfortable, but you're sleeping in a chair because you're, staying by my side. And she looks for that now, but they've denied her that. The beginning of this week, today is Thursday, so that would have been, this would have been Monday. She would open her eyes or briefly close her eyes, and then she'd open them back up again to make sure I was still sitting there.
Oh, wow.
And... it just truly breaks my heart, Marty, to see what they've done to her.
I want to let you know, the general number for ANOVA Fairfax is 703-776-4001. I'm going to mention that again, 703-776-4001. That's the general number. And just so that they know that we know, we've got two calls sitting here on the board that are coming from the general number at ANOVA Fairfax. Now, don't sit there and lurk. If you folks got something to say, you give me a flag. I'll put you right online, and we'll let you rip and say what you've got to say. But if you want to spy on us, don't sit there and lurk. You got something you want to add to this conversation, you just flip that flag up there, and I'll put you right on. And, one of them just hung up. Imagine that. Anyway.
Okay. I know that there are two people in particular that are probably interested within ANOVA Fairfax itself, because the second video that I put out, I think I may have put it in the first one too. Those that were involved in the case management meeting, I listed names. Well, because so people would know who it was that was speaking, and they introduced themselves, so you would know who they are anyway.
Okay, who are they?
Kelly Armstrong. She is the director of ethics and organizational observations.
Mm-hmm. And apparently has no ethics. But anyway, go ahead.
And then there is, well, there were like five different people at the meeting. There was Dr. David Duncan, David C. Duncan. He is the medical director for the case management at Inova Fairfax Hospital. He's the one that told me that, well, we're not here to answer any of your questions. All your medical questions have been asked and answered. Now, you're the only MD in this room, the only person that could actually possibly answer at least a generic medical question, because I have no idea what his specialty is.
Right.
But here he is telling me, well, no, that's been asked and answered. Even when I told them, well, no, actually that hasn't been. Well, we're not here to answer your question. Well, then why are we here? The meeting is only to affect her discharge from their hospital that night, by 8 p.m. that night. Well, that's not what I was told the day before. Fairfax, Dr. Armstrong, like I said, she's a PhD, not an MD, but you would not know this when you talk by talking to her on the phone. As a matter of fact, the lawyers didn't even realize that she was a PhD. They thought she was an MD, but it was and something that she never corrected. That she told me two very specific things. One, that because when they first called me to let me know that they were going to take me to court, they accused me of abandoning Anastasia within the hospital. And after I informed her that she was incorrect, and basically could prove that she was incorrect, she told me, well, evidently you have more information than was provided to our office. And when she wanted to set up a meeting the following day so that they could stop the legal action on their side for the guardianship. So in other words, let's set up a meeting, bring you in, and so we can we need to stop what we're trying to do to go for guardianship. Well, they still went and they still took Anastasia. So, you're going to tell me this, and basically it was to get me into the meeting because once I got there, it was not a meeting to answer any medical questions or anything else. It was strictly where you need to discharge her today. You need to agree to discharge her today. And when that did not come about, because I said I cannot without having my medical questions answered. I have some very specific questions that need to be answered. And without having those answered, I can't agree to this. So they then brought in their chief medical officer, which may be one of the other individuals that would be interested in what's going on regarding the interview, the show. And that would be Scott Betzeller. He is chief medical officer.
What was that name again?
Scott Betzeller.
Betzeller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Man wears purple ties, purple paisley ties at that, which I think is great. I mean, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, my gosh, a Prince fan. Evidently,
there you
he's
go.
Not. He just likes purple paisley ties.
Yeah, there you go. Yolanda, let me ask a question here.
Mm-hmm.
When they went into court, they had to give a legal, lawful, some kind of standing to claim they had a right to guardianize her. What did they claim? What law did they claim gave them this power to do this?
You got me.
So they went into court and could not cite a law or a statute or anything?
Oh, no, they cited the Virginia Administrative Code, Section 64.2000. Or is it 62.2000? I think it's 64.2000 and 2019, 64.2019, that they basically gives them the right to, because anybody can essentially seek guardianship according to the administrative code. But you are still, there's a list of five or six things that you have to prove. And that they have to address and that you have to prove. Now, going through these, because one of the criteria is it's to protect the individual from abuse, neglect, or being exploited or exploitation. And as the ANOVA attorney, Lori Kirkland was making her argument. When she got to that, if you look at the court transcripts, which are also up on the website, it tells you She states that, well, this doesn't really work in our favor because Ms. Adams, Anastasia, has not been abused. We don't find that she's been abused, neglected, or exploited by her sister or anyone that's connected to her. Judge Shannon, Stephen Shannon, the one that authorized or ordered the guardianship, stated in the same hearing, and this is also in the court transcripts, that Anastasia was blessed to have me as her sister, that she was well taken care of, but that they needed somebody that was going to agree with ANOVA. Now, and I'm paraphrasing, they needed somebody that was going to agree to ANOVA with ANOVA to discharge from the hospital. ANOVA stated that they were more than willing to have this matter tabled so that they could remove her from the hospital and then come back and look over it again and review it a couple of weeks later, 2-3 weeks later, to see if the guardianship was still needed.
Uh-huh. When they could restart the Medicare time. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Well, no, I think the way that it's worded, it was that we only want her to get her out of the hospital. Now, Dr. Betselis looked our state delegate Bob Marshall, looked him in the face and told him, and also sent something to him in writing to that effect, if I'm not mistaken, that they were only seeking guardianship to get Anastasia out of the hospital. That was the only reason why they were seeking guardianship. Why do they still have her?
Yeah. Yeah. Because they figured out the system. And like I say, that is, we'll pay this length. And every time, I guarantee you, every time she's admitted to the hospital, in addition to original complications, they're adding new ones. And have you been able to see her medical file?
No, that's one of the first things that the guardians cut off. Well, they actually cut me off of getting...
Yeah, I bet if you could see her medical file, what you'll see is new diagnoses have been added, so they can keep putting her back in, treating her for this, that, and something else. Like I say, that the intent here is profit, to increase the profit of the hospital, and the people be damned. But they have a whole program that they run. So every time, and like we've talked about, each diagnosis has a number of days Medicare will pay. So they've got to keep adding new diagnosis to it. I want to know how they explain to Medicare, of interest to me, how they explain to Medicare this broken hip and ankle that was never set and still got Medicare.
I don't know. I couldn't even guess what that is, basically, or who they would even talk to explain that to.
Okay, yeah. I would personally call the Medicare fraud line.
Right.
And report this and find out if this has been included. They might not tell you. But see, this is another problem I have with all of this. If what these people are doing is on the up and up, there is no reason, especially since you had power of attorney, there is no reason you cannot view her file. And I keep telling people, when they talk about HIPAA, patient privacy, it has nothing to do with patient privacy. It's another one of those big scams. It is everything to do with covering up medical malpractice, neglect, abuse, all kinds of mistakes they made over medications, the wrong medication. It is hiding what they've done so you can't sue them for malpractice. That's what HIPAA is all about. And the first thing they do in these guardianship cases is seize control of those medical files so you can't see what they actually did, what she was actually given, what they actually reported. And I bet you if you saw those files, there is nothing in those files logging the breaking of this hip and ankle. I would bet you money there is nothing that notes this.
Okay. Huh. And why would that be exactly?
Well, why would that be? Because they don't want to pay for it.
Gotcha.
They don't. Okay, you see what I'm saying? This is medical malpractice.
Yeah,
the fact that they left her lay there in this condition and didn't correct it. See, again, they're looking at, yeah, yeah. See, somebody'd be on the hook there. But and then the other part of that is, Yolanda, they would have to explain mm-hmm. how the hell this happened. And who was,
well,
who was,
true.
You know, yeah, they don't want to do that. They don't
want
to do that.
Right. Well,
because now they're liable on another level.
That's true.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Dulles Health and Rehab, the facility that broke her hip, had a inspection this past July, where essentially it was a complaint inspection, at least from what I read. It was a complaint inspection to where several of the findings that they had on there stated that it was a finding relative to the complaint, or that it actually, we found exactly what the person complained about or what the people complained about, because they looked at what sounded like, if I remember, something like 12 or so specific patients, those that had already been discharged, those that were still there, and I guess with varying conditions, and found that they had a problem with medication. They
mm-hmm.
had a problem with entries into the records where the patients were, they had multiple orders for the same medication for the same patient. And the nurses were actually signing off that, yes, they received all this. Now, you had one individual that had four different orders in there for morphine, if I remember correctly. And it stated that, and the nurses signing off on them saying, well, yes, they received all four doses, I guess something like 40 milligrams or something like that of morphine within a single eight-hour shift.
Oh, my God.
So, then saying, well, no, we didn't give him that much, but we just signed off on it. So now my question there would be, does that match up with what is gone, what has been used, and missing
yes.
out of the pharmacy itself? Because if so, then you have medication that has either actually been given overdosed into patients or given more than often it should be, or you've got some medication that's just walked out, and that's a narcotic. That's a class one narcotic?
Yes.
Or is it a class
yes.
two, something like that?
That's
that,
class
that has
one.
Walked out of the facility.
Mm-hmm. Who got it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, is this truly just a administrative error, or is there medication missing? And
no.
we all know Virginia has an opioid problem.
Yes. Yes. Well, and then, Yolanda, in a lot of these facilities, this has been cited so many times over the last 5 years, one of the quickest mm-hmm. way to make money outside of the hospital setting is to mm-hmm. withhold medication from the patients. This would be the staffing that does this. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
the doctors, they withhold the medication, but they write it down as though it was administered, and then they
mm-hmm.
sell it on the street for big bucks. Today's problem with drugs is not what we call street drugs. It's pharmaceuticals. So they're quite valuable.
Right. Yeah, I've seen a couple of stories to that effect.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Jiminy Christmas.
And like I said, and the most recent, I guess, thing that the Guardians have done is that it's I hope I'm not repeating myself, is that they have further restricted visitation to Anastasia. Now, last night, after receiving the email, we asked our priest to go out and see Anastasia so that,
yes.
you know, give her spiritual comfort, give her sacraments of the church. And
yes.
so evidently more than one of them decided that they wanted to go see her. Because whether they hadn't seen her in a while or whatever else, more than one of them decided that they wanted to go see her. I believe it's something maybe two or three of them. And so that was an inconvenience to the staff at the nursing facility that she's at now. So now everyone must call first in advance before a visit, because if you have not called to let them know you're coming, then you won't get to see her. She may only receive one visitor at a time, and she can have absolutely no visitors on the weekend.
Oh. Well, I see. That way they can leave her lay over the weekend, and then with a heads up, they can clean her up so she looks as good as possible.
Precisely.
Just in case somebody does come. Otherwise,
Precisely.
She's left. Yeah. We've got a, yeah. We're about 5 minutes to the hour. Yeah. We're going to take a break here for about the next 4 minutes. And just give everybody a time, some time to assimilate what is going on here. And, I'm going to play a little bit of music here. Go get you a cup of coffee, take a breather, go to the bathroom, whatever you need to do. And we'll be back in about 4 minutes. Yolanda, take a breath and let's
okay.
pick this back up in just a few. Okay.
Okay.
We'll be back in about four, everybody.
Been lying here, thinking about the day we met, the day forever was set, and how much time we've got left. I find myself crying, my eyes out. I gotta make you believe in me without.
Sung by Charmin Worley. It was written from her to her mother, who we just got out of a guardianship. Yolanda, this story of Anastasia has really affected me, and it's left me feeling useless. I have tried everything to get this story out, to make people pay attention that this is what is happening all across this country, in hospitals everywhere, this kidnapping of people and this sudden deterioration and demise and basically what amounts to euthanasia sanctioned by the state. And this has got to be one of the most grotesque things I have ever seen happen. When I listened to the recording of you in that meeting where this doctor is openly lying to you and you're calling her on it, how you kept your composure, how you kept your wits about you, how you kept from exploding and jumping over the table and wrenching her by the neck is beyond me, because I'd be in prison by now. If it had been me, I'd have lost it. How have you managed to hold yourself up?
Well, first of all, Marty, please don't start crying, because I will start crying. And I am barely
keeping
together. I honestly don't know. I do a lot of pacing. I can't tell you how I think at a certain point the body takes over. And it's like with injuries or something like that, that to where you can, when I was 5 years old, the best way that I can explain it, when I was 5 years old, I caught my left foot in a bicycle wheel. And my brother was riding me on the back of the bicycle, and I guess I let my foot drop, and I didn't really feel any pain. All I knew is that I couldn't move my foot. And he, sensing that there was more attention, he started to pedal harder, and there were people on the side of the street that were trying to get his attention, telling him to stop. And when he finally stopped and I was able to move my foot, I looked down, and it wasn't until I saw the blood that I panicked and that I realized that there was something wrong. But I never did actually feel anything from that. Your body puts out different chemicals. I don't want to say it's endorphins, but it actually might be. But
it may be,
block,
yeah,
certain things. And that's the only way that I can think of, that I can explain it. And I'm not always like this. Had anyone seen me yesterday, I was a basket case. After getting the email, I was a complete and total basket case. I mean, well, I spoke with you last night. So,
yes.
I honestly don't know.
That was another thing in this, to wait 15 minutes after you leave the hospital or leave her and then send you this damn email.
Mm-hmm. Let me correct something, Marty. She's
okay.
In a nursing home. She's not actually in Inova Hospital right now.
Right.
She's in a nursing facility. So it is Inova that took the guardianship, but their two designated guardians, Labowitz and Heishman, placed her in a series or this latest nursing facility.
Okay, but they're the ones that are controlling all of this. And I want to give out that number again for Inova. Get on those phones and call them. Let them know. Mm-hmm. That number is 703-776-4001. And I'll say it again, 703-776-4001. They need to know, we know what they are doing. They are responsible for what is happening to this lady. They are responsible for it. They have orchestrated all of it, whether she's in the hospital or they've moved over to one of their participating facilities. They're calling the shots. Let them know what you think. Get on that damn phone. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, Yolanda.
That's okay. No. And it's, you know, and it wavers back and forth. I try to keep my mind busy and doing things. The videos that I put together for the series on Inova and what's happened, to where it takes my focus away from what is actually happening to her. Because if I were to sit and to allow myself to think about it or to dwell on it, I wouldn't be able to function at all.
Right. It's a testament to your own personal strength.
More so to my mother, I think, to my parents, the way that we were raised. And, you know, growing up in the military, it's a different kind of life. You're moving around every few years, and so you're, you know, making friends, leaving friends, and it's just that different type of life. Military kids, military brats have to be more resilient than most just because
right.
of the environment that you're in. You know, your parents deploy. You know, my dad was gone during Vietnam. So
right.
It's just something that I think that is built into us.
Okay. Now tell us again which facility she's actually in right now that is stopping visitation, or you may have to make a call and make an appointment. Which facility is it?
It's the Envoy of Alexandria.
Okay.
It's a nursing facility that's out in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay.
The priests and all of that, when they want, even clergy, when they want to visit her now, they have to give them a call to let them know that, I'd like to visit Anastasia at such and such time, to give her, you know, spiritual support
yes.
or sacraments of the church or comfort. And then even they, everyone has to have their visits monitored now. So there is a staff person that has to be there with you monitoring it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It isn't that they're causing her any damage. The priest might. Yeah. I can totally see how that could happen. Yeah.
This actually brings to mind what happened with Terry Schiavo down in Florida
yes.
back in, I think it was 2004, 2005, that I remember they wanted to get a news crew. And so that to verify what the hospital and what her husband was saying, that, yes, we've removed her nutrition, but she's not suffering, and it's a peaceful transition, and it's this and it's that.
Yeah.
So a news crew wanted to come in to verify that, and they wouldn't let them in. And any time even the family were there, they had to be monitored. There had to be somebody there from the staff of the facility, or actually, I believe the lawyer from the other side, from her husband's side, that was actually advocating for this.
Yes.
So basically, I think that's part of what it is.
Okay. I've got an email here from someone that says that palliative care keeps them from suffering pain. Yes, we know it does. This is exactly what happens when we chemically kill people for crimes. They are doing exactly the same thing. What they are given first is and I can't remember the pharmaceutical name for it, but it is a drug that paralyzes them so they can't move. They can't emit any sound. They can't move their facial muscles. They can't do
mm-hmm.
anything. So
mm-hmm.
what happens is when this toxin, which causes the internal organs to shut down, which is extraordinarily painful, they exhibit nothing. And people say that's not fair because they didn't suffer. Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
They just fixed it so that you six, I almost swore there. Didn't get to see the part where they suffered. This is what palliative care is. We are
mm-hmm.
paralyzing these people to the point that they cannot express the pain that they're in, that
mm-hmm.
they're being caused. And,
I know. It leaves you speechless.
It does, Yolanda. It does. This goes on every day.
Yeah, it's across the country. This is a wider, bigger problem than people realize, as far as
yes.
the enormity of it all, and how many places. I mean, because it's happening in pretty much almost every state, and I'm sure that it's actually happening in all states. It just hasn't been reported in some of the others, or it has not reached the level that it has, say, in Nevada or Florida, or what is rapidly growing here in Virginia.
Yes.
They have had her in palliative care, or they maybe it was that they just gave their intent. In the April 10th hearing, in the federal hearing, they openly admitted that Mr. Labowitz openly admitted, and this is in the court transcript, that the only type of care that they planned on providing for her was palliative care. They didn't plan on doing anything else for her. Now, for approximately 4 months, she was in a room without a television. She's staring at a wall, and I'd asked him several times about providing her a TV, and well, we'll find one. We'll look to see if we have one. It's like, well, you don't need to do that. I have extras. We have extra TV. I can bring one of those in. So it's not a problem. And but yet, this went on and it went on and it went on until finally, I mentioned it again and I thought that Mr. Labowitz knew about the previous conversation. He said he didn't, so I don't know. Look, I have these TVs. I can bring this in. So they allowed me to bring in a TV as long as I was paying for the cable. And that's fine. Why wouldn't I do that? I've always taken care of my sister. And this is something that is going to add to her comfort. So, this because she likes to watch TV. That's her thing. So why wouldn't I be willing to pay for cable for her? But yet, after I did this, her TV kept mysteriously being unplugged.
Why?
So it's almost as if they didn't want her to have anything that brought her comfort or joy, other than opiates, that is.
They didn't want her to have anything that kept her mind stimulated that would indicate she was still there, she was still perceiving what was going on around her. This is a form of torture. This is isolation. Yeah. This is what happens to people who are isolated. They have no communication. They have no visual, verbal stimulation, and they are left in a room alone. And this is globally recognized as torture.
Right. Geneva Convention prohibits.
Yes. Now, why can you not sue them for that?
Why can't I sue them for that? Because I cannot bring an action in her name. She can't even bring an action under her name. The only people that could file an action for anything for her exactly would be the guardians, and then they would essentially be filing an action against themselves. So why would they do that?
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
I mean, at least that's the only way that I can kind of turn it about that makes sense to me. You know, it's like a Rubik's cube, which I have never been able to do, but that's the only way that makes sense to me.
And this is what I keep trying to explain to people about guardianship. When you are guardianized and made a ward of the state, you have just suffered a civil death, meaning you don't exist anymore in the law. And it's equal in its legal consequences to a natural death. And just like you say, you can't sue on her behalf. She can't sue on her own behalf because in the law she has suffered this civil death. She has no right.
She has no.
And the only one, the new owners, the people who are presenting themselves as her, and that's what they do, are the only ones who could bring suit on her behalf, and they would have to sue in her name as her owners. Yes. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Excuse me. excuse me.
That's right.
I have a stress response with coughing as well. It's partially part allergy and part stress response.
I have the same thing.
No one, at least according to, and which is part of the reason why the federal case had been was dismissed for a lack of jurisdiction, that because I cannot file suit for her, and again she can't do it, so they would have had to have done it. So, but when I left yesterday, she didn't open her eyes throughout the entire visit. She was blinking them to let me know that she heard what I was telling her. And that she knew that I was there, but she did not open her eyes at all. She's gone through periods of to where Because I came in, this had to have been last week, it might have been the beginning of last week, that she had something, she wasn't opening her eyes, and she had something in her left eye. And, I mean, this is visible. You can see that there's something in her eye from about a foot away.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's trying to blink to get it out, but she can't because her eyes are so dry that they're gritty, and she can't get this out. And no one seemed to notice this until I pointed it out. And so to where that, because get some eye drops or some eye wash to wash this out. And it was obviously uncomfortable and painful for her because she was grimaced and she kept trying to blink her eye to get it out the way because it was right directly in the center of her pupil. So it's blocking her vision. She's trying to see me, but all she is the center, I'm gone because there's something that is on her eye. Now she has lost the vision in her right eye since she has been at Envoy and under their care. And that's in addition to all of the other injuries that she had.
Oh, well, okay. Good God. I just listen, for everybody listening, and I'm getting a lot of response here in emails and private messages. The Envoy of Alexandria, Virginia, the number is 703-684-9100. All right, 703-684-9100, and you can call and ask about her condition. They're not going to tell you anything, but it'll put them on notice that you know she's there and what's going on. I, Yolanda, when we met there in D.C., and we've talked about this, it was rather strange the way we met. And why you approached me, because you didn't know who I was. And,
right.
You know, I had such an odd feeling at the time, too, and wondering why. And then I just assumed somebody told you who I was. And and I've been told a number of times I'm a nobody. And why would anybody talk to me? I'm a nobody.
Right.
But it's just... I think we were meant to talk. I don't know what I can do here, if anything, but I'm going to try very hard to do something. And
well, I appreciate that, Marty.
Well, the thing is, I will check with you first to make sure I don't cause you any problems. Of course. But again, when you call, if you call the Envoy of Alexandria, Virginia, the number is 703-684-9100, and you are calling about Anastasia Adams, and you just want to know, is she okay? Is she all right? And like I say, they're not going to tell you anything, but at least it'll let them know that you know she's there. I think Luann has just joined us. Luann Fleming. Luann.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. I just saw you click in. Yeah. We're just kind of getting towards it. I've stressed Yolanda out, and I didn't mean to. And you've had her on your show also. Luann, what's your take on all of this?
Well, I just tuned in, but I've been reading all the Facebook articles about what is going on with Anastasia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we're just trying to make sense of it all. You know, how could this be happening? What exactly is going on? I know that...
we're losing you, Luann. Get back closer to the phone.
Okay, is that better?
No,
that
it's
better?
Worse. Nope.
Okay. Is that better?
No.
Yes, for me.
Is it? Well, maybe it's on my end then.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Luann.
So is Yolanda on there with us, right?
Yes.
Yes. I'm here, Luann. Hi.
Okay, so just give me a rundown of what's going on with your sister. I know that she was taking off some of her medicine or...
No, I received an email from the Guardians yesterday after I left from my visit with her that they were going to withdraw her feeding, her nutrition, and up her pain med to bring about, essentially bring about the end of her life through starvation. And now, to my knowledge, because I'm only allowed to, the restrictions still stand, and I'm only allowed to visit 3 times a week for an hour, Monday through Friday, between the hours of 9 and 5, that I haven't seen her. I didn't see her today. And I will see her tomorrow, because I don't like her to have to go more than the 2 days, more than Saturday and Sunday, without seeing anyone, because they don't allow anyone to see her on the weekends. So I want to make sure that she sees me on Friday, so she only has to go Saturday and Sunday before she sees me again on Monday. And I don't know how she's doing today.
Not letting you see her on the weekends? I mean, seriously?
No. They don't allow, they put out a new directive today that no one gets to see her on the weekends, not even clergy.
Good Lord.
It's just human trafficking. It just makes me so angry that sometimes I have a time controlling myself on the line, because it just makes me so angry, and it's hard to make sense of it. You know, it really is.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and I just hope you can be there with her. You know, Marty.
Well, yeah, so do I. Well, and one of the things that just doesn't make any sense to me at all, that I'm still trying to decipher, is that in the emails that the Guardian, that Labowitz has sent me, it's not just from him, because he's copied, Heisman has copied on it, so is the GAL, Saban Johnston, and Lori Kirkland, who is Inova's corporate counsel, they believe, and their emails are now getting very particularly worded. They're putting great care into the way that these emails have been worded, that they believe that she is actively dying, and that she's at the end of her life, and that she's actively dying. But yet, they will not. They've increased the restrictions on her visitation. Now, if they truly had her best interest at heart, which is what the judges tasked them to do, and what they've told the judges they're supposed to be doing, and what they supposedly think they're doing, then they would want her family around her during this time. That her family would, that they'd want a family member with her. It's just because they admit that no one can pinpoint, if she is dying, no one can pinpoint when she will go. So you would think you would want a family member there, rather than her being by herself in a room staring at a wall.
Yeah, I'm just so out of words. It's just...
This is Robin. I'm here with Lulu.
Hi, Robin.
And,
hi.
I only wish that it were so, that we could expect